Want to send a message to your favourite Radio Today presenter? Or send a general comment or request to Radio Today? Well, you can by simply SMSing your message to 44008. That's 44008. Standard SMS rates apply. Radio Today. Radio that delivers.
Changing Destiny is proudly brought to you by WEM Media, right here on Radio Today. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
Welcome to Changing Destiny. My name is Paul Pereira, and in fact, welcome to a new season of our show. We took a break for about 3 months after 4 years solid, and we're back with a very strong opening program, and that's to chat to a lady in the Loofveld of Mpumalanga in the Nelspruit White River area, and her name is Tracy Todd Hine. And Tracy Todd was, until the, I suppose, late 1990s, somebody who was living pretty much the idyllic middle-class life. She was married, her son Chad, they'd been off on a holiday down to the coast on their way back to the Nelspruit area in Standerton, on those back roads through northern KZN and then into Mpumalanga's eastern side. She met with a terrible accident, and that accident broke Tracy's neck and left her a quadriplegic. The story of her life subsequently, of marriage and then the loss thereof, and the loss of self-esteem and the sense of one's purpose, followed by a gradual reawakening, a teaching of others, the sharing of lessons, and indeed of reasons to live, and then the reasons to love, are the things that are coming into a book that will be released early next year, and it's called Brave Lotus Flower Rides the Dragon. And we'll be chatting with Tracy Hine Todd just after we've listened, and I think quite appropriately, to a song that we used to dance to in the late 1970s back at Nelspruit Primary School, and it's by Squeeze, called Cool for Cats.
The Indians send signals from the rocks above the pass. The cowboys take position in the bushes and the grass. The score is with the corporal, she is tied against a tree. She doesn't mind the language, it's the beating she don't need. She lets loose all the horses when the corporal is asleep. And he wakes to find the fire's dead and arrows in his axe. And Davy Crockett rides around and says it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats. The Sweeney's doing 90 because they've got nowhere to go. They get a gang of villains in a shed up at Heathrow. They're counting out the fivers when the handcuffs lock again. In and out of Wandsworth with the numbers on their names. It's funny how the missus always looks a bleeding sane. And meanwhile at the station there's a couple of likely lads who swear like Ash your father, and they're very cool for cats, they're cool for cats. To change the mood a little, I've been posing down the pub. I'm seeing my reflection, I'm looking slightly rough. I fancy this, I fancy that, I wanna be so flash. I give a little muscle and I spend a little cash. But all I get is bitter and a nasty little rash. And by the time I'm sober, I've forgotten what I've had. And everybody tells me that it's cool to be a cat. Cool for cats. Onto the wall. I kiss her for the first time and then I take her home. I'm invited in for coffee and I give the dog a bone. She likes to go to discos but she's never on her own. I said I'll see you later and I'll give her some old chat. But it's not like they on the TV when it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny with Paul Pereira, and today we're going all the way through to God's own country, which is the Lowveld, and saying hello to Tracy Todd-Hine. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, Tracy, your story is not an easy one. It's been a very long story since 1998, when you had that terrible accident that I referred to in my introduction. But just to set the scene, we're talking about having at that moment, sort of out of the blue, become quadriplegic. What is quadriplegic?
Okay, quadriplegic basically means that you have partial or total paralysis in all four limbs.
So effective.
Quadriplegic can actually, there are various levels of quadriplegia, ranging from C1 to C7. I'm termed a C4 quadriplegic, if you want to put me into a box. Basically, I'm able to lift my shoulders and rely on gravity to bring them down, and I can't move anything other than my head and my neck.
And with your head, you are able to operate a computer, able to do your mobility. Just tell us a bit about that.
I use voice-activated software on my computer called Dragon Naturally Speaking. So whatever you do on the computer, I can do just with my voice. It's incredible what technology can do and how it opens doors.
And I imagine that is stuff that has become a lot more available only recently.
Yes, back right after my accident, Nelspeth Primary actually raised the funds to buy me my very first computer and my first voice-activated software. And it took me hours, days, months to train the program to recognize my voice. And every year the program just got better and better. And now the program is actually just so accurate. And, I mean, it picks up words like Mpumalanga, Nelspruit. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you speak in your book about the frustrations that people often give up on using this sort of technology, these sorts of aids, but you had little else to do. I mean, that's what you had the time to do it.
Absolutely, I had no other choice.
You had no other choice. Now, let's go straight through back to what happened to you in Standerton, because there you were, you're coming back from what seems like a fairly idyllic, I guess it was a family holiday, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yes, basically it was an Easter Monday for the our roads in South Africa. Unfortunately, our public holidays, the roads are hectic. We were travelling along the back route, trying to avoid most of the traffic.
Yeah.
And it's a long trip from the Eastern Cape back to the Lowveld. And my son was then 10 months old. And obviously, he had a long trip, tired of being in the car, and got miserable and was crying. And unfortunately, due to the high crime rates in our beautiful country, you can't just stop alongside any road for any reason. So
yeah.
I made a choice and I made a decision. I took off my seatbelt, climbed over into the back seat of the car to change his nappy, and a car in front of us. So it was actually a car that had been sort of welded together with a bit of this and a bit of that. It was a homemade car. And its prop shop broke right in front of us, and there was a lot of oncoming traffic, and in order to avoid that, my husband, he tried to overtake on the left, and we ended up rolling, and I hit my head on the roof of the car and saw my hand drop from above my head and land in my lap, and I just knew immediately.
You knew straight away. I mean, that's a bit uncanny, isn't it? That one somehow your body said to you, this is it, my neck is broken.
Yeah, I just knew, and I can't tell you how and why, but there was just a complete numbness. I couldn't feel anything, and I felt completely detached. Actually, I could see my legs, I could see my feet, I could see my arm fall from above my head and land in my lap, but I couldn't feel it. And then I could hear my baby crying in the car, and I just couldn't turn my head to see where he was, and then I panicked.
Tracy, if we're going to, I think, just to set a scene, I mean, I've had the advantage of reading your manuscript, but obviously listeners haven't. So to set the scene of what comes next and the story that is really quite a remarkable story, and that is the story 98 on to now, can you just give us a little sense of life before that?
Life before that was well, in my eyes, perfect. I was happily married, had my 10-month-old baby, planning a second child. I was teaching primary school at Northwood Primary. Everything just idyllic. I'm very sporty, belonged to the American club, played club hockey, rode horses, went to the gym every day.
And always had an eye for men in uniform, I noticed. That keeps popping up.
Yes,
what's that all about?
I did. No, it was just, you know, back in the day when our men used to have to go to the army.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, obviously, yeah, so that's how I ended up meeting my husband, my first love, when I was at varsity through a mutual friend, and he was in the Air Force at the time.
Now, if we go through, and I'm going to almost jump forward to go back, and that's because when we talk about relationships and what you refer to as rocks being made of sand, if I go right forward to fairly recent times, there's an incident where you are on a beach in the Eastern Cape at Port Elizabeth, and you have an interaction with a guy. He's a down and out, but he has a disability himself in the sense that he's got one leg. And you make the comment in the book, and I thought it summed up a lot of the rest of the story, where you say, a sudden disability affected the dynamics of all relationships, including the one you had with yourself.
Yes, because all of a sudden I didn't love myself, I didn't like myself, I felt ashamed. When I looked at myself in the mirror, I felt ashamed of what I saw. I lost all my self-esteem. I think it's because society actually we look down upon disability, even if it's temporary, after an accident or after an operation, for example. We don't like, I think from little we strive to be independent. If you think of babies, how they learn to crawl and then walk and run and we're such physical beings, and everything we do is about the physical. And I think that we underplay our minds and our souls and our so much in society.
Perhaps we're scared of our vulnerability, and that's the thing we don't want to see. I mean, you refer often to people saying shame, or pity comes up, but the pity might also be a sort of a self-loathing.
A self-loathing and also a fear. I think it's an automatic fear that able-bodied people have. They pass comments like, oh, I would just kill myself if I ever had become disabled. And yes, because I used to say that at one time, because I couldn't imagine being completely paralyzed from the neck down, let alone having a broken leg or not being able to do my sport, for example.
Well, and I guess you couldn't imagine it even when it had happened. It must take a very long time to come to any sort of grip with what reality now is.
I was in complete denial for absolute ages. I was convinced that I was going to walk out of that hospital. And then even after leaving the spinal rehab and coming home, I was still convinced that at some point I was going to have this miraculous recovery, or there was going to be some miraculous treatment. I was my hero, and I followed very closely, obviously, Christopher Reeve at the time, because he was convinced that he was going to walk again, and so he was my hope. And when he died, I can tell you that it felt like my own brother had died, because I just felt, there go all my chances.
No. You always feel betrayed when a thing like that happens. Like, no, that's not allowed. There's got to be. This has just been a long, long bad dream, and it's over. It's going to end.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But then at some point, to be honest, I don't think I've ever made complete peace with being completely paralyzed. But what I've done is, or shall I say, I've not accepted it, but I've made peace with the fact that this is how it is, and I've got to get on with being living, way it is.
But then, Tracy, isn't that part of why you are able to face it, to, in a way, conquer the circumstance? It is precisely because you don't make peace with it.
Or that you don't accept it. Because I think you never let go of that hope. I think hope is an important it's an important thing that we each and every person has in some way. What is life without hope? Even if you are having, for example, if you're a cancer survivor, you always hope to go into remission. And I think that's what keeps most of us going in everyday life.
Now, I imagine, Tracy, you're in the situation, so immediately you're automatically dependent in various ways, very real ways, and constantly, and all the little things you mentioned that I wouldn't even think about, you wouldn't have thought about, and right through to how to use a shampoo bottle and getting a carer to understand that when, in fact, they're not properly trained in caring, etc. And then during that period, your own marriage starts to fall apart because that itself was based in completely different circumstances to begin with. That must be almost doubly hard to deal with.
Yes, I think for me, the breakdown of my marriage was probably even more devastating than the day I was told I was going to be paralyzed for the rest of my life. I think, you know, you feel totally betrayed by your soulmate, and you now become dependent on that person for absolutely everything. But in hindsight, you also realize that your relationship is based on physical things once again. And experience has taught me that you've got to have a lot more to your relationships. And also the fact that we were both young, and quadriplegia and extreme quadriplegia is devastating for two young people to have to deal with, and there is very little support for, I mean, most people don't even know what a quadriplegic is in our country.
I'm going to ask you just to tell us about the flight and what that meant, and then we'll take a little break, because the flight really is the beginning of the new Tracy Todd.
The flight as in, what do you mean?
In the microlight plane after you visited.
Oh, that flight. Oh, yeah, that absolutely changed my life. I ended up going to the dentist one day, and my dentist told me about one of the patients that had a microlight, and I intimated that I would love to go. And one day this complete stranger called me out of the blue, and he offered me a flight in his microlight, and for some reason, I just accepted. I think I always was a bit of an adrenaline junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went up in that microlight, I was so down and out. I thought, you know what? If this thing crashes, or if I happen to fall out of the microlight, then it will be good riddance. That was, I didn't really want to carry on a fly. But as we were flying above the low salt, and you know how glorious it can be.
Oh, yeah.
I just felt so free, so normal, so alive. I was having a real spiritual experience behind the pilot's back. I don't even think he was aware of. And when we came down to land, I almost got all choked up because I could see my wheelchair standing there empty, knowing that I had to get back into it. But when I saw my little boy running up to me, he was about two at that stage, running up to me, and I just realized that I'd been missing out on so much because I was wallowing in self-pity. And I think that, for me, was the turning point when I realized that I could still carry on with life and have a quality of life that I wanted.
And we're going to hear about that quality of life and that amazing turnaround just after we've listened to Cheryl Cole's with Fight for This Love.
Anything can make you sick. Even the good can be a curse. Makes it hard to know which road to go down. Knowing too much can get you hurt. Is it better? Is it worse? Are we sitting in reverse? It's just like we're going backwards. I know where I want this to go. Driving fast, but let's go slow. What I don't want to do is crash, no. That you're not in this thing alone. There's always a place in me that you can call home. Whenever you feel like we're growing apart, let's just go back. to the star. Oh.
Anything that's worth having, sure enough worth fighting for.
Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny with Paul Pereira and Tracy Todd Hine. Tracy, you turn things around, and part of that is learning about purpose and the value you have, and that comes through teaching.
Yes, absolutely. I think ever since I was a little girl, I think I always wanted to be a teacher. So that was my dream and my passion. And I believe now I'm still teaching, but my classroom is just so much bigger. Bigger than the little grade 2 classroom that I used to teach in.
Yeah, yeah. And how does that get to begin? I mean, it's mainly through motivational speaking.
Motivational speaking, writing, my blog, social media, and believe it or not, I've actually done quite a bit of tutoring. And when my son was in primary school, he volunteered my services to teach his class for 3 whole days while his teacher went on a course.
Yeah, well, that sounds
I couldn't let him down.
Yeah.
So I ended up going, and it was the most wonderful experience.
And sometimes you affect people, or your message has an effect on people's lives you wouldn't expect, including, say, a man who's trained to fight in the tank corps, the armor corps.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about your soldier and his letter.
Well, that was as a result after one of my motivational talks. And he wrote me the most beautiful letter afterwards about how my talk and my words had inspired him. I think back in the day, the army was very, very difficult, more difficult than we could ever imagine as women. I think men that were forced to go to the army in the apartheid years, went through a lot more than we actually know. And, you know, I think South African men in general, this whole thing about cowboys don't cry, society puts those pressures on them. Hmm. And just how, you know, he just felt that my words had touched him, but in turn had written me this most beautiful letter that gave me back my sense of self-worth. And I realized that I could actually make a difference to people out there.
And when did you learn to love again, and how?
Oh, that's a long story, and I don't think we've got time for all of it, but briefly, I ended up I always wanted somebody, you know. We're not made to be alone, no. And I dreamt about having someone special in my life. And after a terrible heartbreak, I ended up on a dating site, believe it or not, but purely just to, I thought, I just want male friends and had male company in my life. And yeah, and then I ended up meeting the most wonderful man, and I'm going to leave it to read, for the listener to read my memoir to find out how and what happened there.
Wonderful man indeed. When we say that you say you were born to teach. In teaching, it's very often not the stuff we expect that we will be teaching, is it?
No, absolutely not. I thought I was going to be teaching maths and English and geography and science to primary school children, and that's not what it is. I actually find that by me sharing my story openly and honestly with people in all walks of life, they in turn share their stories, and we've all got a story to tell, and we've all got things to share.
And Tracy, if you had to distill your talks, and as they would have developed, of course, because of your sharing with audiences over the years, what would be the bottom line that you, or bottom lines that you try and get people to consider?
Just basically not to give up.
Mm-hmm.
My motto is, why walk when you can soar? And each of us has a potential. I think we are just so caught up in negativity and attitude. Attitude really controls everything.
And
it's the only thing that we have control over is attitude.
And is that a fear thing again? Is do we not find comfort in very simplistic notions of things are bad, it's beyond my control, I'm a victim, that sort of a thing, but it's kind of a false comfort.
It is a false comfort, but I think we're bombarded by that in the media, and that's what sells, and so that's what we cling to, and that's what we seem to like drama as people, and that's what draws us. But definitely that's not what actually gives us our flight and gives us our wings, if you want to say it like that.
Yeah, and if you want to look at wings, let's talk a bit about the Thunder Fund. I mean, so you wanted to tell your story, you've written out your story. People don't publish the stories of those who aren't generals and world conquerors or world famous. So you struggled to find a publisher. Tell us a bit about the Thunder Fund.
Well, that was all through Tracy MacDonald. She had read my memoir. When I had finished it, I sent it out to a couple of publishers, mainstream publishers. And then she asked me if I'd managed to find a publisher yet, and I said no. And then she offered to help me crowdfund on Thunder Fund. And, well, that was just the most amazing experience, and I was overwhelmed by the generosity and support. We managed to raise the entire amount for the publishing within a very short period. And I'm extremely excited and nervous. Because now we're under pressure, and this book's going to go out there, but it's a dream come true, absolute dream come true. And I think that publishing both memoirs and these kind of things in our country will probably change, and that we can actually go out there and we don't have to rely on mainstream publishers, although we love to have their guidance.
Absolutely. And Tracy, between now and the time that your book hits the shelves in a few months' time, how do people follow your writing, your views? How do they get in touch with Tracy Todd-Hine and be in touch with you?
I love Facebook, so they're welcome to contact me on Facebook. I do Twitter, and then I also have a blog, which is Tracy Todd on WordPress.com.
Right, and just for listeners, it's Tracy without an E, so Tracy, and then Todd in the normal way, and the Hine is Heine. So Tracy Todd Hine, and particularly on Facebook and on Twitter, and you will catch her there. And Tracy, thank you very much for joining us in Johannesburg, and all of our love to the Lowveld and to you.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Great, and thank you, listeners, for joining me and producer Trevor on Changing Destiny, and please do the same thing at the same time right here on Radio Today 1485 in Johannesburg and throughout the region on Audio Channel 869 worldwide on www.1485.org.za. Thank you, goodbye, and God bless.